Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity War, where we sit at the kiddies' table at the Christmas lunch, chat to our buddies, and wait for the time when we wrap our presents from Santa. I'm Chris Adams.
And I'm Nick McKinnon.
Did you ever have to sit at the kiddies' table, Nick?
Oh, I still have to do it.
Really?
Yeah, when you've got like 5 kids there and they all want to be sitting at the adult table, there's got to be a adult that goes down there. Nah, to be honest, it's my mother. My mother loves sitting down at that table.
I remember hating having to sit at the kiddies' table. It was so unjust. I was like, what do I have to do to be at the adults' table? Like, even when I'm like 14 or 15, even 18 maybe, you end up with the next generation of kiddies and you're like, what do I have to do? Do I have to go out and breed or something? When do I get accepted?
Wow. I was going to say you had to grow pubes, but apparently your family was much stricter than my family was.
Yes, this is going to be a bit of a Christmas-themed episode.
Ho, ho, ho.
Actually, it's about lying.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same. No diff. How you going, Nick? Should we go with that? Should we get back to how are things? How are things in Nick world?
I've had a very busy day, Chris.
Okay.
And
have you been celebrating the day?
No.
Because we're recording this on the day that Australia decided to legislate for same-sex marriage. It's done.
It's done. Well done, Australia.
Now, I had a listener to our podcast request that we do an episode talking about whether or not parents should or shouldn't lie to their kids about if Santa is real.
There we go.
So we're doing it.
We love getting these requests from fans, Chris, because it makes us feel like we have fans. So, Chris.
Yes.
Do you lie to Pilot? Do you tell him there's a doggy Santa?
Pilot does get a gift every Christmas.
From Santa?
Well, I mean, we wrap up a gift in the shape of a bone.
Tell me it's a bone inside it.
No, generally it's not.
Oh, no, you bastard.
I mean, we make pancakes for her in the shape of a bone, you know. So we just do I lie to the dog? I don't know why I would lie to the dog. I don't know if there's anything to be gained from lying to the dog. I mean, I'll lie to the dog if I want to tease her. Here, go catch this and not throw anything, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's the only fun of having a dog, isn't it?
No, she's lots of fun. But no, I don't have kids. So this whole Santa question sort of like, I'm like, oh, I don't know. But so I had to ring my mum and find out.
Did your mum have kids?
Yeah, my mum had kids.
Yeah, right.
And I had to find out how she brought them up because I wasn't sure if I was a believer of Santa or not. I was trying to remember my childhood. And so I said, Mum, did I believe in Santa? And how did you guys handle it? And she said that my parents never really fostered the idea that Santa was real, but they didn't really squish the idea either.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, she said that my brother and I, we never really believed in Santa. Because I don't ever remember believing in that Santa was real, but maybe I did when I was a tiny little kid at some point. But yeah, so that's all she could offer on that. So if you extrapolate, okay, I was a non-Santa believer and I've turned out like this, did that harm me? Potentially. But I don't know. Were you a Santa believer? Did you get brought up believing in Santa?
No, I did not. I was one of those kids that used to go around telling other people that Santa wasn't real.
Oh, you horrible person.
No, if they want to be stupid and believe in fairy tales, Chris, I'm going to help give them the whichever matrix pill is the truth pill.
And did that get you into a spot of bother with a few parents who were a bit annoyed with you?
Or? I think my parents got in trouble. No, I didn't get in trouble. Not that I remember anyway.
So did they raise you to not believe in Santa?
Well, so I'll tell you a story, Chris.
Yes, please do.
Story time with Nick.
I'll get my milk and cookies.
Well, that's what it's about.
Okay.
So one Christmas, well, I've got two older brothers, and so I was the innocent bait in this whole operation. No, I'm 4 years younger than my next oldest brother. So they told me, look, Mum and Dad don't know that you know that Santa isn't real. And so we decided we would we'd like leave one of those sandwiches and milk out for Santa. So we made a peanut butter sandwich, but my dad hates garlic. And so, so we put heaps of garlic inside this peanut butter sandwich. Dear Santa, thanks for stopping. Here's a carrot for Rudolph and a peanut butter sandwich for you. Thankfully, Dad saw the funny side in it. We still got our presents that year.
Even for being naughty.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Because I don't have kids, and this question never really had to be forefront of my mind. I was reading what other people have done. One person was saying that they try and raise their children to be very critical thinkers, and so they would. So it was to do with the tooth fairy, and so they left a present after their child put a tooth under the pillow, and then they had a discussion with the child afterwards about, do you think that the tooth fairy really left a present for you? You know, and they went through the whole scenario with the child and about what happened, and you know, well, there's a way you can test this. You know, so you can go and talk to your friends at school. You know, if they have a tooth, you know, they can put the tooth under the pillow, but don't tell anyone and see if the tooth fairy brings them a present. And so there were all these friends of this little kid that would put these teeth underneath the pillow and not get any money. So they were like, oh, we've uncovered this truth that, you know, the tooth fairy is not real.
Now, the truth you've uncovered is that if you know things, then you won't get any money. So play dumb. Tell your parents you believe in all this bullshit and you'll still get more presents from Santa and $2 from the Tooth Fairy.
Right. What do you tell your kids?
Yeah, well, I tell them that it's not real because it's not real.
Right. Do they just believe you straight out, or are they like, what do you mean? Because they're not just getting messages from you. They're getting messages from, you know, the whole of society and school and TV and movies. And there's this whole machine trying to manufacture this fantasy of Santa.
That's true. But I've repeatedly drummed it into my kids that Dad knows everything.
Right.
So they don't question me, Chris. And I plan on maintaining that as long as I possibly can.
And are you taking away some of the richness of Christmas by doing that?
Well, so that's an argument that I had with a staff member at the school I work at last year. She very much believes in not taking away the magic of childhood.
Mm.
And I guess because I didn't have that, and I don't feel like I missed out on anything by not knowing that Santa was made up, I don't really understand it. Like, I hear her arguments and I don't really get it. I don't understand how you can spin lying to your kids as being a positive thing. Like, there is plenty of magic, real magic, in the universe. We don't need to be making up fake magic. So let's tell them the real magic. Let's tell them they're made of stardust. Let's tell them that they evolved from fish. Like, that, those things are incredible. Why do we need more than that?
I don't know what you do. I assume that even if you take Santa out of Christmas, that you still celebrate Christmas. And it's, for your children, it's still a magical time. Would that be the case?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Yeah.
It's a seasonal thing. It's a ritual that we do. It's a tradition. Different people do it in different ways. But just taking Santa out doesn't mean that you're destroying Christmas, does it?
No, well, I hope not. No,
you're not going through there with a wrecking ball?
I don't know why. Like, I don't think I could examine it too closely, but I really enjoy putting the Christmas tree up with the kids and decorating the Christmas tree and putting lights around our house. It's a really special thing. Like, I don't think I'd do it if I didn't have kids, but having kids, it just makes it exciting. Like, the kids just love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sitting down with them and writing Christmas cards to all their friends, it's just lovely doing all these sort of things. And, you know, going to the tree lighting thing in wherever we live is a special thing as well. The kids love it. We don't need to add lies on top of it to make it more special.
Some of the people that I was reading about it, they were saying that the first 3, 4, 5 years of age of a child, you know, a lot of people consider that the fantasy life years, where they live a lot in fantasy and in their imagination. And so having this story of Santa can add to the magic. And is it harmful to lie to your kids about Santa? I mean, I think if you get to a certain point, a certain age, you'd have to consider it, you know, the older you get and you're still pushing it on them, it gets more and more harmful. But with how far their brain has developed and what sort of a world they live in, is it harmful at that age? I was reading different psychologists, some saying it's harmful and others saying, ah, it's fine. You know, some like, I don't know. And no one's really done any sort of study where you have some sort of control group of 1,000 kids over here who have all believed that Santa is real, and 1,000 kids over here that are all told Santa's not real, and then you follow them for like 10, 20 years and see what sort of people they turn into. No one's done any sort of study like that. But we do know some things about lying and the effects that that can have.
So I'm glad you bring this harmful topic up, Chris, because I think this time last year, I think I would have been a bit more forceful in saying that it is harmful, that if you put into your kid's mind that my parents have been lying to me for the last 10 years or whatever, then that will increase their distrust of you going forward. But I don't know, like I think there's ways of maintaining the myth of Santa that don't necessarily breed that resentment and distrust, in that if you're just playing along as a joke, and the moment you feel your kid raises any doubt about it, you don't just try to reinforce that Santa is real.
Yeah.
If they're 8 and they come home and say, you know, my friend at school said that Santa isn't real. Is Santa real?
Mm.
You don't just go, yes, he's definitely real. Just don't ignore that person at school. Like, I think that would be a harmful thing. But if your kid says that to you and you go, well, I don't know, what do you think? Mm. Well, maybe not say, I don't know, because you do know. But maybe just say, well, that's an interesting question. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the best way, yeah.
I don't know if I think it's the best way, because I think the best way is just to say, no, he's not real. But if you want to play along with it, cool.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. I was listening to one lady explain how she raises her children, and she was saying that she lets them believe in Santa, but she will answer any questions that they have. If they have a question like, is Santa real? And, you know, they're like 3 years old or something. She'll say, well, what do you think? And let them, if they want to still be in their imaginary world about it, that's fine. If they want to push for more of a real answer, then she will answer that honestly.
I think the argument I've got against that is that, like, if my son comes to me and says, is Sweden the capital of Norway? I'm not just going to go, I don't know, what do you think? Mm. I will say, no, it's not. Oslo is the capital of Norway. So why would this be any different? Like, why do I deliberately not give information that I know to be true?
I don't know, helping them to find their own way of finding answers. I don't know. I don't have much of a response.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
That can be helping them to develop critical thinking skills and so on. But like you were just saying before, like, you know, is it damaging? Like, I don't really see, like, the parent who sort of pushes on their kid who comes to them at 8 and says, is Santa real? And they're like, oh, yes, it's real. I think, you know, the parent has a real issue there. It's like they want the kids to believe that Santa, so it's all about them. It's not about the actual child. They want to keep the magic alive. But for most children, I'm just guessing that it's probably not that harmful in the sense that when you get to a certain age and you figure out that Santa is not real, whether you figure it out on your own or your parents tell you, it's not like you're necessarily going to have this disappointment, this crushing disappointment and this resentment to your parents for lying to you, but you can sort of feel like that you're going through some sort of coming of age sort of passage into, oh, I'm being led into the adult world here. And so you can feel sort of ushered into that and part of something more grown up and be proud of yourself for that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, I can't remember, but I feel like I probably felt pretty proud for knowing that it wasn't real.
I'd grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like the reverse, the other side of that is that I think it is possible to be harmful in forcing your kids not to believe in Santa. Like, I think we can be too forceful either way. Like, my daughter is far more wanting to go along with those sort of stories than my son is. And I've had to learn to go, you know what, that's okay. If she is telling me, no, Dad, I mean, she doesn't use these words, but if she, with her actions and all that, is telling me I actually want to go along with this stuff, Dad, well, then, all right, cool. I'm not going to be a bastard and just say, no, we will always say very eloquently and straightforwardly that Santa does not exist and we will not engage in any fun based around Santa. No, if we want to pretend that he's real, cool, I can do that.
Yeah.
We've talked about in some other podcasts that any sort of harsh fundamentalist line of this is the right way in all circumstances, that's probably not helpful in either direction, whether you think Santa should be told to your kids as being real or not real, whatever. Yeah. Go with what your kids go with. But don't force them either way.
I like it.
One of the things that has crept into my head, we often create arguments for why we believe the things we believe, sort of create reasons that aren't really there. And so, you know, a year ago when I would have said, no, no, you really shouldn't tell your kids to believe in Santa because it's harmful for them and they'll know that you're a liar and all that sort of stuff. At least part of the reason why I don't want my kids to believe in Santa is because I don't want to have to give them extra presents. I don't want to have to go out and buy extra presents. I find it hard enough choosing one present.
Yeah.
And I hate consumption. I hate when we just turn into consumers. And I hate when my kids see an ad on TV and go, oh, Daddy, I want one of them.
Mm.
And they're just becoming, you know, those people that are I'll be happy when people. And I don't want my kids to be those sort of people.
I actually feel really weirdly fortunate that when I was growing up, there were times when I was very aware that, because I was very aware that Santa wasn't real, and I was very, very aware that my parents had to buy the presents, and I was very aware that we were poor. So I knew that there's nothing big coming, and a part of me didn't really want anything at all and putting any stress on the, and, you know, my brother and I ended up just making all sorts of our own board games, and we just had such fun with our imagination. And there's a part of me that feels thankful that I didn't have this vast array of toys and everything. Although, you know, I had Star Wars figures, I had Lego, I had...
Your story was much better before you mentioned that, Chris.
There were times when, you know, the kitchen cupboard was pretty bare and stuff. But
see, and Christmas would have been much worse if you had have believed that Santa had given you that piece of cardboard with a texture and scissors to make your own board game.
Yeah.
That bastard Santa.
Yeah.
He gave the kid next door a
PlayStation,
and, well, not a PlayStation in your day, maybe a Commodore 64 or whatever.
Yeah.
And he gave me scissors and cardboard.
So I was aware of how things sort of worked in that way. It's a weird lie, because most lies are told for us to gain something or to hide something. But what do we gain from telling our children?
Magic.
We gain magic. It's weird, but we all, I mean, you can use it in a fearful way as well, because Santa can, knows when you're naughty and nice. He can see everything. That can be a bit of a frightening picture.
Are you talking about religion there, Chris?
Well, it's very akin to that sort of a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's eerily similar. Using fear.
How creepy is that Santa? He knows when you are sleeping.
I know.
He knows when you're awake. What the hell, Santa?
Knows if you've been good or bad.
That's one thing, but watching people when they sleep.
Yeah.
Watching kids when they sleep. Santa's a pervert.
Breaking into your house.
I'm pretty sure Santa's going to be the next Harvey Weinstein.
But it is a weird lie. Lying, it's something that we all do often, but that's a strange one. Mm.
You don't think lying is quarantined to Christmas and the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny?
Nah, we lie all the time.
I never lie.
Part of it, like even if children are lying, that's actually sometimes a sign of a faster sort of development of their brain, you know, because lying is a survival mechanism.
So you're saying I should encourage my kids to lie?
No, I'm just saying if they're lying a lot, then you can be proud of them. But it doesn't mean you encourage
them. So if they pick it up organically, that's okay. But if I'm going out of my way to instruct them in the ways of lying. Gotcha. So like you were saying that lying has some sort of evolutionary benefit.
Yeah.
It shows that a kid is developing.
Mm.
So like I think most people would think of lying as being a negative thing.
Yeah.
But are you saying there's positive things
No.
that can come from lying too?
Well, it depends on the way you look at it. But I would still say lying is a negative thing, that our goal, our direction is to move to somewhere where we're being more honest and we're not lying. But there are certain situations that call for lying.
Such as?
And, I don't know. So you see some young lady run around the corner of the street and past you and around another corner, and then you see a guy running at you and he's got a great big knife and he says, have you seen a lady with brown hair, you know, anywhere? And are you going to lie to him or are you going to tell him that you had? I mean, you could say, yeah, I saw her. She went that way and pointed in the opposite direction.
Or you could say, yeah, I've seen her, but you've got a knife and there's no way in hell I'm telling you, buddy.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a nice bit of honesty. But yeah, so there are times when lying can be considered good. Why would you not consider lying to him? I know you just came up with a better answer for him that included honesty and still didn't tell him.
I definitely would not use that answer, by the way. I would go with the one that you said. Because he might try and stab me then if he knew that I knew where she went.
Yeah, so lying can be good in that sense. We tell white lies all of the time to not hurt people's feelings and stuff like that, and that can be good.
How can that be good?
How can that be good?
That one I think I disagree with you. I agree with the first one of, you know, someone trying to stab someone.
Saying that can be good doesn't mean that it's always good.
Yeah, but give me an example of where it can be good.
Okay, let me think.
No, you cannot think. Stop thinking. Good luck with
that. White lie can be good.
Does my ass look fat in this dress, honey?
That's an obvious one, but I'm looking for something better than that. Because
that one's no good and I'll shoot you down in flames. I'll hit you for 6, Chris.
If you're telling the white lie, you know, if someone is a terrible singer and they've come off the stage and you say, oh, that was great, you're not necessarily helping them. So,
no.
You know, you might be smoothing over your social interactions with them, but it's not necessarily making their life any better in the long run. So that's sort of a white lie, which those sorts of things can happen all of the time.
You're driving them towards embarrassment on Australian Idol in front of the whole nation. Yeah. Don't be that parent or friend, people.
Yeah, it can happen. But I'm sure there are times when you just, the little ones, what's a good example? Okay, a white lie that's good. Well, seeing as we're on Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, what if your nan gives you a really shitty, crappy present and you say, oh, thank you, that's really lovely. Is there anything wrong with doing that?
Yes.
Tell me what.
Well, you're lying. There you go.
Yeah, you're lying. Yeah, you can feel uncomfortable doing it. So but, there's,
no, okay, there, so there are ways to answer honestly that don't involve lying. So, for instance, oh, it's really thoughtful that you went out of your way to get me a present. I really appreciate that. You can say that.
Okay.
If they then say, do you like it? Well, then that's a direct question. And then you might be forced to go, oh, well, look, I do appreciate that you got it. It's probably not something I would have bought for myself, but I still really appreciate that you bought it for me.
Okay. I would just say, yeah, thanks. It's lovely. Like, there is a negative thing about it in that you have to go through that process of, you know, that you're lying.
There is. The other side of it is that often we can tell when someone's lying to us.
Yes.
And so if there's even a risk that the other person can tell that you're lying, then all of a sudden they know where they stand with you and it's not a good place. They know that you're a person that will lie to them, who won't tell them the truth if it serves your purpose. Because you're not doing it for their purpose, you're doing it for your own awkwardness in that conversation. Now, I'm sure you'll tell yourself that you're doing it for them because you don't want to hurt their feelings. But like, if I buy a present for someone, if they don't like it, I want to know that because that helps me in the future to not buy that crap present next time.
What if your nan gives it to her while she's on her deathbed?
That's a fair call. Again, like, I think I find it helpful to think of myself on the receiving end of the lie and to say, how would I feel? Like, so even if I'm on my deathbed, I would still want people to be honest with me. Like, in a sense, it sort of matters more at that stage. Like, I'm dying. What the fuck do I care if I bought you the wrong Christmas present? I'm going to be dead in a week. That's not a big deal.
I just think there are white lies that we do. A lot of time we do it to avoid hurting another person.
No, no, that's what we tell ourselves.
You don't think that there's ever the possibility that we're actually doing it to avoid hurting another person? You think it's always about us?
I think there are examples of where, yes, you are doing it to avoid hurting another person. But if that situation comes up, you have to be honest with yourself with what you're doing. You are saying that the person I'm communicating with right now is so fragile that I can't be honest with them. And that's not an equal relationship that you're dealing with there. That can't be a friendship. So if you're doing that to a person, you're all of a sudden saying that I'm above this person. They're too fragile. They're too pathetic that they can't handle a little bit of honesty. If you buy me a bad present, Chris, I hope that our friendship is strong enough that we would cope with it and we'd just sort of laugh it off and go, who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a thought that counts.
But if you're getting the secret Santa, you know, at work,
yeah,
and you get the crappy present there and you don't really have that stronger relationship with someone.
Yeah, well, you don't know who bought it. But that situation, a secret Santa sort of thing, you don't have to say, I love it. You can just open it and go and laugh at it and that'll be it. And they won't know whether you loved it or you hated it.
Mm.
I mean, everyone hates their secret Santa presents, don't they?
You just hurt me by saying that. I just gave the best secret Santa present ever.
Did you? What'd you get?
I got a teacher at school, a football, an Aussie rules football, and she loves it.
Does she know that you gave it to her?
Well, she was able to deduct that it was me because I'm the only one that would have known.
Because you wrote your name on it?
No, because we'd already bonded over the fact that I love Aussie rules and she plays Aussie rules and is hoping even to, you know, make the AFLW. She probably won't because she's a realist, but she...
Do you tell her that?
No, I'm like, I'll coach you. I'll help you get there. You know? On the gift wrapping, I wrote, live the dream. I gave her this Aussie rules football, you know, and she loves it. And she took it with her on the excursion she went on.
That's cool.
You don't always fail at a secret Santa, but...
I do.
I was able to do that because I already had a relationship with her. So, but if I was buying for someone who I didn't really know, that would be a struggle. How are you going to get a gift that is meaningful?
Yeah, well, so economists have this idea that we should never, ever give presents to anyone. If you do an economics course at university, in the first year, they'll talk about this Homo economicus, which is this fictional human being who lives 100% with the economics of things in mind 100% of the time. And so they always make rational decisions. Yeah, they don't care about the influence on other... Well, they do care about the influence of other people, but only in a very cold, logical sense. So when they ask someone whether they want to marry them, they, you know, draw up a spreadsheet and list the pros and cons and go through that with their prospective partner. And so anyway, so in economics, there's this idea that no one should be buying presents for each other because it's just it's a waste because, like, the person that knows best what I want is me. So the person that should be buying presents for me is me. And if you try and buy me a present, you're going to get it wrong because you don't know me as well as I know me. So in reality, all of us should just be buying presents for ourselves at Christmas. And I love that idea because I hate buying presents for other people because I know I'm going to screw it up. And yep. B, I hate getting presents from other people because when I receive it, I go, oh, fuck, geez, I wish this was X, Y, and Z.
Some people are good at it though, and maybe the more observant are better because they know us better than we know ourselves. But yeah, with giving, I too find it stressful.
When you say the thing of giving, I think of the stress of getting the right present and not screwing it up.
Yeah.
And
I hate Christmas. I'm a Grinch.
No, you're not.
For some people, they love the season. You know, Christmas Day is okay, but it's everything leading up to that which just drives me nuts. And going to the shops and seeing hundreds of angry, grumpy people like myself wandering around and stressing about everything, I don't like it. There are elements of Christmas that I go, you know, yeah, it's good for us. You know, I think for a collective people to be trying to focus on connection and on giving and on family and stuff like that, they're all, you know, really positive things. And so I'm not a complete Grinch. For some people, they care about the seasons and they care about birthdays and dates that people passed away. And, you know, everything's sort of set out in their mind that way. For me, a day is a day and Christmas Day doesn't hold anything special.
No.
My birthday doesn't mean anything to me. But for other people, it means something to them.
Yeah.
I remember the issues of my wife wanting to celebrate my birthday and me not wanting to, causing issues.
You are a Grinch. Goodness.
I know. I am. I'm a grumpy old man. But realizing that it's not just about me and having to, you know, I don't want to bring other people down from something that they get joy out of, you know. So if I'm making it about me in that situation and I don't care about it, I don't want to do it, then.
How dare you make your birthday about you, Chris?
Yeah, I still don't have to be selfish about it. Within relationships, other ideas, birthdays included, they're all valid. But even though we lie a lot, even though lying can be a sign of intelligence, can be a survival mechanism, lying isn't something that I consider good, because all of our choices, all of our actions have consequences, and lying will catch up with you or with the other person. Lying will find you out. Lying doesn't help. So there is a part of me that looks at this whole thing and goes, yeah, lying to your kids about Santa, it's shaky territory. Even though it's a weird one, because most lying is either, you know, a white lie, or it's a lie of omission, where you don't tell the whole truth. There's the lying of manipulating, where you're trying to gain control over someone or a situation. There's the lying of, you know, just concealing, you know, something wrong that you've done to stay out of trouble. There's lying to preserve a reputation or to increase, you know, your reputation or your stature. There's these different types of lying. But yeah, I'm a really bad liar. Like you were talking before about people can pick up whether you're lying. That's the thing. Like people can pick it up unless you're like some sort of pathological liar and you don't have that conscience that will trick your body language into giving it away, then people who are really good at it can read you. But even the everyday person can read the body language and know that you're lying. Mm. So it's not good. But lying as a form of fantasy for a young child, I don't know if it sits at the same level as a lot of those other lies. Because in one sense, all fiction, all movies, all art is a lie.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily a deliberate lie. Like when you create a movie, the person sitting down watching it knows that it's fiction.
Yeah, but we're human beings and we're brought up on, so much of our history is built on narrative, and we're brought up on narrative and we're brought up on stories, and even fictional stories, even that sort of a lie can often reveal a lot of truth. I'm completely cool with that. Even though I think maybe the first Star Wars movie I saw when I was like 4 years old, I probably thought that was real. But but there are lies that we tell. I was sort of like thinking about when we lie to our young people about things, even like when we lie to them about drugs, right? So we lie to young people about things like, we say, marijuana is the worst thing in the world and you shouldn't do it and all of these things. And then they go and try it and they go, oh, it's not that big a deal. And then you tell them, ICE is the worst thing in the world. And they go, well, you lied about marijuana. Maybe you're lying about ICE too, whereas ICE is the worst thing in the world. So, but lying has these ramifications. When if you're not being honest and you're not delivering the full truth, then they're not going to believe you later on. There is that potential that they're not going to believe you when you're trying to tell someone something that they really need to know, and can come back and bite you.
Chris just very sneakily advertised that he's a drug dealer, people. Not for ICE, though, apparently.
You and your lies. I should be keeping count. Anyway, we also lie to ourselves.
That's the most common one.
Yeah. Is it?
And it's the easiest one to get away with. You are the easiest person to trick.
To deceive.
Yeah.
So how does that work? How do you trick yourself?
Because we want to.
If we lie to ourselves, can we lie to ourselves so much that we actually believe the lie to the point where we don't actually recognize what was true?
Yeah, of course.
So if I lie to myself, okay, what's an example?
I sense the Spirit of God moving through me right now.
Okay.
People do that all the time.
And you're saying that they will lie to themselves that many times that at some point they start believing that the Spirit of God is actually moving through them.
Yeah, and they do that because it, you know, they see other people in their communities making the same claims and they want to be like those people. They want to be part of the group, so they want to believe.
So it's not a case of I don't feel it, but I sure as hell am going to say that I do to just to belong. But oh, heck, I wouldn't want to do that. And like, if you could point out something that I was lying to myself about, I do. I want to know about it. I want to hear it.
You personally, yeah. Chris.
Yeah. I'm not that you'd know, because this is something that I've lied to myself about, but no, I do agree with you, because I think we all have blind spots. It's usually around our identity and how we see ourselves that we start to believe certain things about ourselves which are untrue. And they can be as simple as that, going back to the, you know, singing thing. We might go, I'm a great singer, and you're not, but you believe it. Or you can go, I'm a crap singer, yeah, and you can actually sing, and because you believe this lie. And often it's because a whole lot of people have told you a lie. Like, if you tell a child that they're hopeless and they're worthless and they're never going to amount to anything, and you tell them that enough times and they start telling themselves that, then that's what they'll live out. But they had the same potential as everybody else if you told them, you know, like, tons of positive and real feedback towards reaching their full potential.
They didn't necessarily have the same potential. If Einstein has a kid, that kid has more potential than my kid. Sorry, Will. Genetics matter.
But it's amazing how much a lie can shape how we see ourselves. So I would agree with you that, yeah, we can believe lies about ourselves that we tell ourselves that aren't true and that other people tell us.
I've still been trying to think of, like, what's a lie that we tell ourselves. I don't know why, but the religious ones come up for me,
yeah,
pretty, yep, obviously. So we tell ourselves stuff like that God cares about me as an individual. And when you start telling yourself that, you start to find patterns in everyday life and start to attach that meaning to your everyday events. And so you'll say, you know, the trivial example is the, you know, the parking space that, you know, oh God, I need a parking space. And then you find a parking space and you go, oh, see, God does listen to me and answer my prayers and that sort of stuff. That sort of lying to yourself is a reinforcing lie.
Mm.
And so you lie to yourself and then you tell yourself that that was the reason you got the parking spot, and you've got no evidence for any of it, but you just tell yourself it anyway.
Yeah.
And we accept those lies to ourselves because we want it to be true. We want to be the special thing that the creator of the universe cares individually about. We don't want him to care about everyone. We want him to care about me.
For me, that doesn't mean that God doesn't care about the individual. But to think you're the only one is a ridiculous idea. You know, like, so he lets you have the parking spot, but then someone else misses out on that same parking spot. How does that work then?
They weren't praying.
They weren't praying hard enough.
This faith as small as a mustard seed, Chris, will get you a parking spot. That's in the Bible somewhere.
So do you think religion or God is anywhere near akin to, like, if you're saying don't lie to your kids about Santa, is talking to your kids about God come in the same sort of sentence, or is that a completely separate conversation?
I do think it's different. Firstly, I think it's different because the adult actually believes it. So if an adult actually believed that Santa was real, well, I don't know if you'd really say they're lying. You'd just say they're wrong.
Yeah.
And so if someone actually believes that there's a God and all that, and so they're telling their kids that there's a God, well, they're not lying. They're just maybe wrong, maybe right.
Yeah.
One of the things I don't like about religion is the claiming of truths that you don't have evidence for.
Mm.
And so if you're going and telling your kid that God exists when you don't really know, like, I think you and I have discussed that in the end, none of us really know. And, like, you talk to any intelligent religious person and, like, they won't try and tell you that they definitely know that God exists. They'll just say that, I don't really know, but, you know, I've had these experiences, and it's not just an experience thing. They've thought intellectually about it and they can't imagine that the universe could have just poof come into existence like this without a intelligence behind it.
Yeah, I think telling a child with certainty that God is, it can be harmful. I think back to my parents, Christians, devoted to their faith, and yet they didn't baptize me because that was left to me as my choice. And I really appreciated that. I mean, it was still clear what they believed, but because they didn't push it on me, I reckon I was less likely to rebel so hard when I hit that point in my journey that I couldn't find a way back. And wherever I was, their feelings wouldn't change toward me. And wherever I was, you know, in faith and doubt, that was seen as valid, and I really respected them for that. But I think telling your children what they should think, what they should believe, indoctrinating them, I reckon there's harm in that. We should trust and respect our young people to be smart enough to figure it out for themselves. And in that, you can still share what you honestly, genuinely believe, but just, you know, don't try and make them a photocopy.
But as well as that, I would also say we need to be honest with ourselves and say, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that would be part of it. I would hope that that would be part of what you're saying, is that, yes, this is what I believe, but yes, I don't know. That should be a part of it. You should be embracing doubt in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big call, but I think you're being dishonest to yourself if you're not.
Yeah, I was asked to go on a beach mission today, which for people not from a Christian context is Christian people go on a beach to try and win converts for Christ sort of thing.
You were asked to go?
Yeah, well, they're desperate because there's not many Christians anymore, Chris. Yeah, so I was asked to go on this thing, and like the thing that just goes through my head is, why the hell would I want to do that? Because there's just an arrogance to anyone that thinks they have all the answers to them, that they're going to go to a beach and try and tell everyone the way the world is. Like, there's an arrogance that you know something that these people walking along the beach don't know. Whereas, like, I think for you and I, we're not like that. We don't want to come along and try and treat everyone as stupid people who are ignorant and don't know anything. Instead, we come along and go, well, heck, what do you think? These are the questions I have. What sort of thoughts do you have? So instead of coming at conversations like, I have the answers, it's coming along to the conversations and saying, I have questions. And I'm interested to hear what questions you have, or if you think you have answers, I'd love to hear them.
That's the way I love to approach it from when I remember to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
That I'm just saying that's my ideal, but, you know, anyone can fall into any sort of trap of behavior.
So should we start wrapping up?
Yeah, we should.
What's your take-home message, Chris?
Santa is a creep.
Santa has far more in common with modern-day priests than we ever knew.
Okay, in wrapping it up then, what is Christmas really about?
Lying? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. Good. Like, I'm going, okay, well, what's my take-home message? If this is a Christmas-themed episode, what? It's about connection. It's about family. It's about giving for people who believe. It's about celebrating the birth of Jesus. So why are we tainting that with lies?
It's just funny that you reference the birth of Christ and then, you know, how dare we be lying around this time, as though that's...
Oh, I'm not worried about that.
No, yeah. I know, but it's just funny.
Well, yeah. I mean, was Jesus born on the 25th of December?
Yeah. No. Well, someone posted something on Facebook today saying that 1 in 5 British people don't realise that Jesus' birth is on the 25th of December. And I'm like, well, it's not. That isn't the date he was born. I didn't say anything to this person because I felt that would turn into a conversation that I didn't need to have.
I mean, but we don't celebrate the Queen's birthday on the Queen's birthday either. It just doesn't matter. That's for me, dates don't really matter. What matters is the fact that it's Christmas, and I don't want to bring everyone down, even though I'm bar humbug on the inside very much.
You just like to pretend you're bar humbug, but you're not.
I'm grumpy, man. I am. Do you think I'm lying? Do you think I love Christmas?
I think you're lying to yourself. I don't think you're lying to us. I think you actually believe it. You're the Grinch, but you're not. It's just like when you try and convince me you're a bad person. I'm like, well, you're not, because I know you're not.
All right, so my take-home message is joy to the world.
Sing us the Christmas carol, Chris.
I can't sing. I'm a terrible singer.
You know something I just realised, Chris?
What's that?
Both of our names have Christmas references. So you're Kris Kringle.
Yep.
And I'm St. Nicholas.
There we go. That's what we're taking home. And I'm going to just deliver presents.
Sick. And look at kids while they're sleeping, you creepy bastard.
I'm calling Christmas off this year because they've all been naughty.
All of them.
Especially you, Nick.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, can I give you my take-home message?
Yeah, I think we need a take-home message. That would be good.
My buddy, Sam Harris, wrote a book on lying, and in it he says, every lie haunts our future. There's no telling when or how it might collide with reality. And I really like that idea because often we use lies as, you know, social lubrication sort of thing to avoid an awkward situation. But it's really a short-term potential gain for long-term pain. Because if you have any intention of having a long-term relationship with a person that you're in communication with, then truth has to be the only answer. Because when you lie, you are seeding distrust between yourself and that person. You're saying to yourself that this person can't handle the truth. You're belittling them in your own mind. You're treating them like a child. And the reality often is just you're selfishly avoiding an uncomfortable conversation. But there's negative consequences for both you and the person that you're lying to. And so let's be willing to have those awkward conversations. Let's be willing to risk offending people and trust that they might just forgive us and accept us for being who we are and for our relationships to be real and authentic and not just nice.
Yeah, and I think that's what Christmas should be about, real, authentic relationship.
If only we had some jingle bells to rattle.
So we do wish you a Merry Christmas. This is where we work in tandem here. I wish you a Merry Christmas and...
I hope you get a dildo for your Secret Santa.
No, you got it wrong, Nick.
Oh, this is why I hate Christmas, Chris.
You meant to say Happy New Year, Nick. Oh,
Happy New Year.
But we do actually hope that Christmas is a really good time for you because it's pretty hard for some people.
So I hear.
Especially if you're lacking in connection and real relationship. We need to be looking out for each other, I guess. Yeah.
I've got to do a talk at school about Christmas and I was thinking, what is the meaning of Christmas? And given our recent conversations, I was thinking, you know what? The meaning of Christmas is that God looked down and went, these people are screw-ups. How do I respond to that? I go and hang out with them.
Mm.
I really like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's one of the best ways I've ever heard it put, Nick.
There you go. Round of applause.
When I was going through my little dark night of the soul bit, there was an uncle of mine who just quoted me a line from a guy called Adrian Plass. Because I was stuck in all of these theological arguments and everything in my head and couldn't. And he went, oh, just remember, God's nice and he likes you.
Ah, that's simple.
And I went, oh, that really works. You know, so that was really helpful at the time.
Yeah, cool.
It's not necessarily going to sustain me, but it was really helpful at the time.
It's not necessarily a sound theological argument either.
No. But it was what I needed to hear at that point. For me, that's the biggest thing is that God went, I want to hang out with you guys. I always picture him hanging out with the disciples as they're sitting around drinking wine and eating and having a joke and ribbing each other and being silly and stupid as human beings do. And just with a smile on his face, it's going, yeah. Like, you don't have to get everything right. You can have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
You can be a bit wrong.
Yeah. What, Jesus? We've run out of our 12th container of wine. Well, we'll just make another one. We don't want this party to stop.
So we hope you have yourselves a good Christmas. Thanks for listening again.
And a happy new year.
You said it. Yes. Well done, Nick. Working as a team.
Yes.
Yes.
Extra points for teamwork.
To wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy birthday to myself, and to remind you to support the Eternity Ward by liking, subscribing, etc. and party on. Hey, anyone want some wine?